you don't attract into your life what you want. You attract into your life who you're being. So started in January 2023, manifested 100,000 followers in 5 weeks. The first place to start in manifestation is not your vision board. It's observation. A question that I get asked a lot is, okay, if you're so good at this, well, can't you manifest winning the lottery? And the answer is no, you can't. You can, but you can't.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Getting There, the podcast. Now, today's episode is going to stretch your beliefs, your limits, and perhaps even your reality, because I'm sitting down with a manifestation coach, Matt Cook, a man who blends quantum physics with spirituality to show us that everything is energy and our lives are responding to us in ways we didn't even realize. This conversation is about the real work behind manifestation, not just the clickbait or the cliches. We dive into synchronicities, free will, destiny, doubt, duality, and why so many of us struggle to claim the life we secretly know is ours. Matt breaks down how to shift your reality when life feels against you, why we sometimes chase the wrong things, and how to trust in the unseen, and what to do when the universe tests you. If you've ever felt stuck between who you are and between who you could be, if you know deep down you are meant for more, this episode will wake something up in you. This is Matt Cook. This is manifestation without the fluff. And this is Getting There. Matt Cook, hello and welcome to Getting There, the podcast. We are not in our usual home, but everything happens for a reason. I've been so excited to have you on here. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be in London and good to chat. So well, let's get to it,
right? Beyond waiting.
Wanting.
Beyond wanting. What was the driving force behind this? Like, what inspired you to start this? Because you're a manifestation coach for a little while now.
Yeah.
But what was the real idea behind the book?
Okay, so manifestation is the deliberate act of bringing something that you desire into the physical world using a combination of thinking, feeling, and acting. Those three things you could mold together as intention. And if anyone's listening to this, just note that when I first found this work, I was really skeptical. I needed the science to demystify it. And I'd love to go deep with you into that. Before we dive deep, I'll say one thing. You don't attract into your life what you want. You attract into your life who you're being. It's good to have something that you want. Everyone starts with something that they want when they want to manifest. The key, though, is that you don't then stay in wanting. The definition of wanting, if you look in a dictionary, is haven't got. It's a declaration of lack, something that you lack. So you get clear on what you want, and then you have. You embody the version of yourself in your imagination that has that thing that you want, as if it's already done. Too many people, Brogan, say, I want more money, I want love, I want success, but they're staying in lack. And as I'll explain, we can call it the universe, I call it the quantum field. It reflects who you're being in the present moment. It also reflects what you want as well. So if you stay in a state of wanting, you'll reflect and you'll see more wanting. I can dive deep into how
deep. For anyone who's listening to this, is like, what's he talking about? Quantum physics? What's that got to do with creating my reality? How can we make that accessible for people whose first time it might be hearing this?
Sure. So not everyone listening to this will know my origin story. So maybe we should start there. I was in property for 10 years. I was 26 years old at the time, so 8 years. I was the youngest manager in the company at the time. I was selling really nice country houses in Worcestershire. And in September 2018, I was under just a lot of corporate stress. I'm sure a lot of people can resonate with that. I had a really tight chest and, you know, I was struggling to talk about it. You know, I was just dealing with it. And in the end, I opened up to my wife and her family a little bit. And my wife's grandmother suggested that I had some reflexology for it to help. So I agreed. Rocked up at her house after work one evening, was met by this reflexologist, had no idea really what reflexology was, apart from what I thought was a foot massage, but I was told that apparently it could help. So I lay there on the recliner and he asked me one question that started it. And there's two things that happened. He said to me, Matt, tell me who you are. And I said, oh, I'm 26. I'm an estate agent. I'm the youngest manager in my company. And he said, no, I didn't ask what you did for a living. I asked who you are. And I remember thinking in that moment, who am I? Mm. Who am I? Well, I thought I was this like identity. Mm. And in that moment, I realized that there was someone inside a shell that was an estate agent. And that realization sparked a big question. And it was, what does I want? That was the first thing. And I didn't know. And I know we've spoken off air about what you want. And I didn't know. But the one thing I did know is I was seeking some form of freedom. Definitely not working in corporate for 40 years. So every single night after that, I started to consume content on YouTube like Tony Robbins just to keep me going.
I love Tony. It's a great place to start for anyone that's listening.
It is. You know, just for that hit of motivation to get back into work the next day. That all built up to the second thing that happened, as people were reading the book. In February 2019, we're talking about 5 months later. Bearing in mind, I'm not spiritual at all, really, by this point.
You know, okay, so like atheist, doesn't really believe in God.
Well, like, sort of-ish. Like, you know, I watched like Most Haunted when I was a kid. You know,
do you believe in ghosts but not God?
Yeah, like I didn't even know what that really even sort of meant. Like, I went to Sunday school as a kid, but just because my parents forced me to go. Like, it wasn't. Yeah, I'd never really considered it. And at the point, the content I was listening to on YouTube wasn't that spiritual either. Like, Tony does dip into spirituality, but he's more like motivation in a sense. So, lying in bed with my wife, Tuesday evening, 10 o'clock, listening to something on YouTube or Netflix, one of the two, on our laptop. And I turned over to go to sleep. And my wife's still awake, listening to Netflix. And out of nowhere, a very strange sensation started to spread across my body. It started to encompass my feet before encompassing my whole body. And it,
when you say sensation, like a vibration. Yeah.
Like an intense vibration. Like, and I've experienced it several times since, and it's really hard to explain. It's not painful, but it's so intense that you feel like you could hover, literally.
Okay.
And I've always been curious. And because it didn't hurt, I was like, let me just see where this is going, you know? And then like a blisteringly high-pitched ring in both ears. And then silence. And then I heard a voice. And my mum was from Essex. We were speaking about this.
You heard me.
Yeah. You can hear an accent like that from a mile away, right?
you know it.
And I was like, what's that sort of voice? And then it got closer and closer. And the voice said, hi, Matt. It's mom. Can you hear me? Now, the reason that's cool and mind-blowing at the same time is because my mum actually passed away 18 months before that.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was like, mom, like, where are you? And as I started to exchange a few words, my wife, Coruscant, nudged me and said, Matt, who are you talking to? And as I turned to tell her and turned back, my mum had gone. Mm. Now, to answer your question about was I spiritual, of course, like, losing your mum at 51, like, she was 51, I'd liked to have believed that there was a heaven, you know. That was as sort of spiritual as it got for me. I was like, you know, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
But she wasn't here, right? There I am, a corporate guy who's sort of waking up in a sense, has just spoken to his mum. Firstly, who'd you tell? Secondly, like, how do you connect again? And thirdly, like, okay, well, that's now absolutely proven to me, because I was awake, that there is more to life than meets the eye. Now, my initial want was to connect with her again. Of course, right? So every night, I would set up the same scene. I'd be like, Coruscant, let's watch the same show.
Yeah.
Right. Tonight, I'm going to connect again. Yeah. And this time, I'm going to
be quiet.
Yeah. Don't nudge me this time.
If I move, don't say anything.
I'm connecting with her. Yeah. Don't do anything.
Everyone be quiet.
So I'm lying there, like, waiting for this vibration to come again. It doesn't come. And I was like, oh, I was disappointed, because I was like, this time I was like, where are you? Type thing, like, all these questions. It didn't come. And for a few weeks, it didn't come. And it didn't come again. And but because I'm that type of person that really needs to understand, like, how things work, I started to do my own research and then started to go, okay, well, if I've connected with something that's no longer here, what are the foundations of physical reality then?
Yeah.
Yeah. So started to very quickly discover what I'd either forgotten or not listened to in school, which is that this isn't solid.
So funny. We've got a bit of a similar story-ish, but I was at Morgan Stanley and when I had like my awakening and I was leaving the corporate world. But the lady who I worked next to, she had started her like journey into this and she said, you do know this table's just made up of energy. And I was like, oh, well, she's like lost her mind. She's like, no, you break it down. Every single particle comes down to an energy force.
Well, let's talk about this. Everything can be broken down to the same place. So let's just take the human body or this chair. We break it all the way down, all the things that make up this thing. We arrive firstly at the atomic level. And these are atoms. These are, we could say, the building blocks of physical reality in the sense that they behave in the same way as you and I. And what that means is an atom, which is this tiny, tiny, tiny particle, travels through space in the same way we do. And what that means is the further an object is from its destination, the longer it takes in time. Yeah? So atoms can be watched in a sense. They move around just like Brogan moving from one place to another. I can watch you move. And that's the same for an atom. I could watch an atom move. But the thing is, the atom's made of something. So if you then split open an atom, you then get to what's called the subatomic level. Now, these particles are obviously even smaller. And let's just choose one. Let's choose the electron. So the electron makes the atom. Yeah?
Got you.
The electron does not behave in the same way. It doesn't travel through space. An electron, when you're observing it, appears in one state. And then let's say, Brogan, you're watching it and you want to change your observation to here. What happens is, as you move, it disappears and instantaneously reappears. Instantaneously.
Like it knows it's being watched?
Yeah. And then let's say you're here and then you want to move your observation here. As you move, it disappears and instantaneously reappears. So the question is, when it disappears, where does it go? Where it goes is where it's from. And if you break down the electron, we could go even smaller, but if we break down the electron, it actually goes back to what's called...
the Big Bang Theory?
Well, it's a field of energy. And this field of energy has many different names. The universe, God...
What is it, you knowing quantum physics and manifestation and the field of energy, has it made you reframe what you think God is then?
Yeah, I can tell you how this all pieces to manifestation, then my thoughts on that. So this electron, bear with me here and everyone listening, because this is how manifestation truly, truly works, okay? Where it goes back to is this infinite field of energy, okay? This field is known as the universe, God, the matrix, the quantum field, the unified field, whatever name you give it, that's where we're all from. If we break ourselves all the way down, we'll get to this infinite field of energy. But what turns it from a field of energy to that particle? Observation. Observation. Observation collapses the energy, collapses the wave of energy from being potentiality into the particle. Okay? So, in my book, I say the first place to start in manifestation is not your vision board. It's observation. What are you observing day to day? Because your own observation is collapsing energy into matter. That's why you hear people say, I keep manifesting the same things into my life. I keep meeting the same people. Things keep happening. Now, the moment you change your observation, the world changes. Now, people might be saying, well, what do you even mean by observation? So let's practice this together now.
Let's do it.
Okay. And everyone listening, if they can, close your eyes for me. Inside your head, Brogan, not out loud. Just say the word hello 5 times. Once you've done that, do it again. This time, shout it loud.
Hello.
Inside your head.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Got you.
What did you experience? Did you see the word hello? Did you hear the word hello? What did you, when you did that?
I had 2 people.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are a lot of people in my head.
So, but did you hear the word hello? Or did you see the words?
First time I heard it, second time I saw it.
Okay, great. So that's perfectly normal. Who heard it?
Me.
Who's me?
Brogan.
Brogan was the name you were given when you were born.
Okay.
Exactly. I say this to everyone.
Yeah.
The me was the separation from the word.
Source.
Hello. Yeah. You're not your thoughts. You are the purse, the thing inside that was seeing it or hearing it. And that's got many names. You can call it source, consciousness, God, awareness, the witness, the watcher. I call it the observer. The observer is separate from the thoughts. Now, if we don't practice that separation, where is the observation every day?
There wouldn't be any.
Well, it's either been put to one side or it's become entangled within the thoughts that we think every day.
Is the observer and the ego the same thing? So like Eckhart Tolle, how he describes it, would that...
No, the ego is separate from the observer. The observer isn't anything. The observer isn't an identity as such. Like the ego has been built through like your upbringing experience. Yeah. But if we don't practice what we just did there, you in that moment were separate from the word hello. You heard it and you saw it.
Yeah.
If you don't practice that separation every day, you can actually think you are your thoughts, such as, not saying this is what you think, but just in general, someone that says, I'm not good enough, I'm not successful, I'll never find love, money doesn't come to me easily, whatever. If we think that that is who we are, that is your observation of reality. And then what happens is there's no gatekeeper in your brain. So that thought will slip past your awareness. We hear that all the time. So most people's dominant observation of reality is the thoughts they think every day. Okay.
Agreed. Most people think that's them.
Yes. And therefore they are unconsciously manifesting that thought.
Yes.
So I always say manifestation isn't reserved for the elite. It's not a genie in a bottle. It's science. I can talk you through that. Every single human being is in a state of manifestation every single second of their day.
Question. Okay. Because this is something I've been dying to ask you. Knowing what you know about quantum physics and manifestation, how do both of our realities coexist? Or one of the ways that I've been able to cope with life, that sounds a bit strong, but understand life, I've taken from it that only my reality exists. And I know that can be really hard to understand. And whatever I feed my reality, obviously I will create. But I'm intrigued because you could really manifest something that would be the polar opposite to mine. Who would win? How do we coexist? And can we only focus on our realities?
That's a great question. So look, if people wonder where I'm going with my whole research, I'm very interested in the simulation hypothesis at the moment, that we're living in a simulation.
Make it easy for me to understand that.
The Matrix.
Yep.
Yeah, and the godfather of that is a man called Thomas Campbell, Tom Campbell. And I met him in Switzerland a few weeks ago, and he's a physicist, and he's spent 65 years studying it. He spent over half his life in his 30s in the out-of-body state. He was on the Joe Rogan podcast not long ago, earlier this year. I spent a whole weekend with him in Switzerland talking about this. He was NASA's top physicist at 1.2. He's created a model called My Big Theory of Everything. Yeah, I literally tore his ear off the whole weekend.
That's all I'm thinking right now.
And he said it's a simulated reality. But in the simulated reality, there are free will awareness units, so you and I, that are coexisting within this rule set. And the rule set is space-time. And space-time has rules such as time, such as gravity. You know, there's various rules in this rule set. So, look, and there's a lot of people talking about it, like, Stephen Bartlett's had Donald Hoffman on recently, who's talking about the simulation theory. There's a lot of, even the top AI safety expert was talking about the odds of us being in a reality. You've got Elon Musk sort of talking about it as well. So it's all sort of leading in one sort of direction.
But does that mean that I'm in a separate reality to you, or perhaps at different levels we are joined at one, but on another level we are orchestrating our own?
So let's talk about this in the context of, and I'm not saying, like, you know, I'm researching the simulation hypothesis. It makes a lot of sense to me because how I understand quantum mechanics. But let's imagine you and I met in a game like The Sims or RuneScape or GTA. Like, let's just imagine, if you've ever played a game like that, when you play a game like that, you have the controller broken, and then you're playing a character in a game. So let's say I do the same and we connect to a live game and you and I meet in that game. Oh, there we are. We're in like the same studio in The Sims. But then let's say I go off in one direction and you go off in another. The question is, does the studio still stay there? In the game, like, it's no longer in your... It's no longer there, is it? You're only seeing what you observe in a game. Now, the observer effect in quantum mechanics is, like, whatever you observe collapses into form. So in a sense, there's a theory that, like, if you walk down a road and walk around the corner, does the road still exist? well, in theory, like, it would return back to energy. But there's other conscious observers playing the game at the same time, and they'll render their own reality as they walk along. So to say, do we live in different, like, realities and parallel realities? In a sense, you could say maybe, but in another sense, we could say maybe we both just render reality as we observe it. It doesn't mean that, you know, we're in different parallel, different realities. It just might mean that, you know, you go off in one direction, I go off in another. Does the in-between exist? Who knows?
Mm. Fascinating, isn't it, when you think about it?
Yeah, but if you think of a video game, and if you look at the experts like Rizwan, who's got the simulation hypothesis, and he's published by the same department as me, and I've got his book, and his model is that in a game is rendered through observation. Now, that is exactly how manifestation works as well. Like, things render through observation. Now, talking about, like, you and I, fair game, a question that I get asked a lot is, okay, if you're so good at this, well, can't you manifest winning the lottery? And the answer is no, you can't. You can, but you can't. And I'd love to explain why from, like, the lens
desperate
of...
Desperate to know that.
Okay, so let's say, and I've spoken about this on a couple of podcasts this weekend, let's say you and I play the national lottery here in the UK.
Yep.
Yeah? Simple maths, let's say 35 million people buy a ticket. Let's just say the prize is 4 mil.
Okay.
So you and I buy a ticket, 35 million people in total have also got one ticket. You and I, would you agree, have a 35 million to one chance of winning? Yeah?
I would agree, yeah.
You'd agree. Now, of that group, you've got a chunk of people that don't understand manifestation. They've maybe never even heard of that as a concept. However, they've always had a belief that one day they'll win the lottery. They don't know why, but they've got a feeling. And occasionally those people win, and you hear them in an interview go, I always knew I'd win. But what you don't hear are all the millions of people that haven't won who still hold that belief. From that group, you've got people who are desperate and are just looking to play because they might win and they've got no other choice. And then people playing purely randomly. Maybe they've got a subscription. They don't even know they're playing that weekend. Or maybe they're in the queue at Tesco and just buy a random lucky dip. There's some great scientists out there. One of them is Dean Radin, and he's proven scientifically that intention, which is thinking and feeling, modifies probability. So what that means, Brogan, is you and I and a few million other people, by believing that we'll win and really seeing what we do with that money, you can absolutely shift the odds from 35 million to one down in your favor. You could most likely bring it maybe to 3 million to one. Maybe if you're really good, 300,000 to one. The truth is, though, you're never really going to get it one-to-one. Because, do you know what? You and I live in a fair rule set. We both have free will. We'd break the rule set. Can you imagine if everyone could reduce odds one-to-one and everyone could win the lottery? Like, it would make no sense to the evolution of the universe. If you look at something, though, such as healing... And we're seeing this now from the likes of Dr. Joe Dispenza and the thousands of people that are healing from his incredible work. When someone's got a health condition, they are playing against themselves. They're not, they might have an influence over, their family might influence them, medical professionals might influence them. But when something's wide open, what do I mean? There's so many outcomes, and because it's one-to-one, it's not
less
affecting
anyone.
Yeah, it's not affecting anyone else's free will. So, and we see this in the placebo study. Someone can be given a sugar pill thinking it's a miracle drug and they heal. Now, what's healing them? It's not the sugar pill, it's their mind. So if someone is doing this work, there's so many outcomes for healing. They could heal in one meditation, in an advanced retreat with Dr. Joe. They could live with the illness for decades, or they could go downhill very quickly. When it's wide open, intent can modify the outcome in their favor. So where people struggle with manifestation is they're too attached to a specific outcome. So why don't I manifest winning the lottery? Because I won't, probably. Because we live in a probabilistic universe.
Right, okay.
So what I'd rather do is hold an intent of money flowing my way from unexpected sources.
Yeah.
Which it does. Because it's wide open.
So can we this is something I wanted to talk to you about, because I know I said outside... We sit outside and I'm like the queen of manifestation. Like, guys, I shit you not. If you said to me, get whoever on here next week, it's no problem. But I also believe I've, even in the recent few months, I'm so tenacious and like such a driver that I've manifested things that haven't been meant for me. Mm. And they've, and does there come a point when you manifest and then you say, do you know what? That hasn't come to fruition. Has it got a certain length that we should allow these things? And are some things just not meant for us? Like, I believe I could probably try for all the will in the world to sing like Beyonce and practice and look like her, but it's just not going to happen.
Exactly.
And that's just focusing on my singing ability. So does somewhere in this, does there become a source where things are simply not meant for us?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. However you want to look at God, the universe, Tom Campbell calls it a larger consciousness system. It's looking to evolve. It's, and that's a word we always hear, but it's looking to maintain itself and not de-evolve. It wants to continue learning and exploring. So it will help us when an intention or a manifestation is for the greatest good of everyone, because we're all part of the same thing, remember? So, but it's not like free will exists, so it won't necessarily interfere. So manifestation, like we can absolutely manifest unwanted outcomes. Mm. We can. So if you're holding the intention for something, it might not be for the greatest good of all concerned. It doesn't mean you can't manifest it. So you could manifest it and it arrive and go, oh, this isn't for me. But you can also manifest unwanted outcomes by the way you think and the way you feel as well. So like I said, we're always in a state of manifestation. And I think when those things arrive, we very quickly know whether it's for us or isn't for us. And it all comes down to the quality of your intention, you know, and what your goal is.
And do you think we could manifest as a collective?
100%. Yeah. So there's so much evidence. Lynn McTaggart, who's another great sort of researcher in this field. She's got a book called The Intention Experiment. You've got Transcendental Meditation, TM, and they've proven scientifically how global coherence and global intent can reduce crime in countries when people come together. You've got Joe Dispenza doing coherence healing at his events, and a collective of people can heal one person, like when they're, you know, so absolutely, the more people that come together, the greater the intention being broadcast.
Does that mean it's made you a believer in prayer?
Yeah.
Is prayer a type of manifestation?
Prayer is...
Or is that a tool? How would you describe that? And do you pray?
Not in the sense that people would imagine praying. I think there's two types of prayer, though. So prayer is intention. It's like a visualizing. Now, there's two types of prayer. Like, people might say, help me, like, I really need help. And that to me is like you're really putting out there that you're in lack. You know, prayer sometimes is visualizing as if it's already done, you know. So for me, the way I pray, if you like, is meditation, and we can talk about why I do it through meditation and my journaling and my gratitude. So prayer to me is visualizing my life, the things that I seek, as if it's already done, knowing that that is how it works, knowing that that is what modifies that probability.
Let's walk through a Matt Cook manifestation and something that you've done in real life, what the tools you've used and what the outcome is.
Okay. So, well, one of the greatest manifestations is, of course, my book. And I say something that not many people talk about, which is dream smaller to manifest faster. Now, what do I mean by that? You hear online, dream big. But actually, dreaming big's good for certain people, but actually more harmful for others. And I'll tell you why. The bigger the objective sought, the bigger the goal, and the further away it is, the more separation there is and the more lack there is. And the chances are probably that someone will most likely get frustrated of the length of time it's taking for this big goal. Now, manifestation is a journey, not a destination, and things sequentially manifest. So even if you have this big goal, it's going to follow a certain path.
Yeah.
So the quickest way to manifest the biggest goal is to break it down. So in January 2024, I had an intention, manifestation, to sign with Penguin Random House. At the time, January 2023, I had 1,000 Instagram followers, and there was a goal of writing a book. But at the time, with no following and a limiting belief that I don't think I'm a great writer, do you think I stuck with that goal? No, I thought, right, that's the intent. Now I'm gonna park it. Let me break down what I think this manifestation would look like. So I'm gonna break it down to an agent, and then I'm gonna break down the agent again to a mentor, and then I'm gonna break down the mentor to a following. So my first intention was to grow a following, because it made sense to me that publishing houses surely these days are going to probably sign you if you've got some form of influence. So that was the manifestation. So started in January 2023, manifested 100,000 followers in 5 weeks.
Sorry. How? What?
5 weeks, yeah.
How? But were you like, I want 100, or was 100 the byproduct of you just wanting...
It was actually the intention by the end of the year. And because I really genuinely knew that it was wide open, it happened in 5 weeks.
So what were the tools you put in place to make that happen in 5 weeks?
Literally, like every day in meditation, I would see videos going viral, the message getting out there, and like people following like constantly. And that's exactly what happened. Like at the time, my videos were going viral, literally.
So just for people who don't meditate and who are listening, I actually do some of the activations by Mimi Bouchard. Yeah. Have you used them?
No, I haven't.
Is that the type of thing you're doing? So for anyone who's listening, yeah, she has a certain frequency to her music, and the whole idea is that it's meant to elevate and rise your vibration. And she'll say, imagine how you're moving, imagine how this feels. So sure, you're really getting into that state.
Yes.
So how do you visualize your meditations?
Let me come back to that, because it's very important what you've just said. I want to firstly tell people how I got to Penguin, because this is really important. So the following first exploded. From that following, I had an email from a guy called David Kirkpatrick, who was the former president of Paramount Pictures, who said he wanted to collaborate on a project. Got on a call with him. It turned out that he'd retired from Hollywood and had a writing school and wanted me to help these writers manifest their writing projects. He then basically said, Matt, I think you've got a book in you. I'd love to mentor you. So he then became my mentor and friend. He then helped me put together a book proposal. I didn't know you had to have a proposal. I thought you just wrote the book. So he put this proposal together. He said to me, Matt, is there a particular book out there that's inspired you? Because we can pitch to their agent. And I said, yeah, James Clear's Atomic Habits. He said, why? It's not a manifestation book. And I said, because I love its structure. It's all about habits, and habits are foundational for manifestation. He said, great. So we pitched to his agent and we were rejected. We had a rejection email. That's fine. And I said to David, I said, rejection is protection and actually also redirection. So we got to trust it. So we repitched, and we pitched to Steve from New York, 50 years literary experience, 80 years old, and he signed me. He then tweaked the manuscript, the book proposal, and then he pitched it to all the big publishing houses like Penguin Random House, Simon Schuster, Hay House. And Penguin were really interested and they wanted a call. So he said, Matt, this is Penguin Random House, New York, the biggest publisher in the world. Be ready. I'll be on the call with you. But this is serious. I was like, okay. So we get on this call and we wait for these two editors to load up their call. And as this one editor popped onto the screen, I noticed a book behind her. And I said to her, before we start, can I just ask why that book's behind you? And she went, oh, what, this one? And it was Atomic Habits. And she said, yeah, because I edited it. She said, but I didn't just edit it. The whole department here took it to market, So I ended up then, it was a great call. Normally in that world, the book goes to auction and like all these sort of publishers bid for your book, and they made me an offer to take it off the table. So that there, and I manifested Penguin. So that there shows people how I got clear on the intention, and then I reverse engineered it down to following, mentor, agent, publishing house.
Steps,
yeah? Which, why don't people talk about that? And I still allowed the universe to manifest these steps. Now, you asked about meditation. How did I do it? Well, I don't like the concept of fake it till you make it. I prefer feel it till you make it, because there's a difference between the two. I struggled with that because one of my first ever manifestations was manifesting money. And I didn't understand how I could fake having money when I genuinely was broke. Yeah, it was hard for me as a concept to do. But what I understood scientifically is if I slowed down my brain, going from this busy brainwave called beta to alpha, which is the imaginary brainwave, down to theta, which is very hypnotic and suggestible, if I visualized living an abundant life, my brain and body subconsciously, scientifically do not know the difference between what's a dream and what's real. And everyone can relate to this if they think I'm sounding stupid here. If you remember the last time you had a nightmare, chances are you're in bed, middle of the night, probably 3 a.m. You wake from that nightmare, and for a split second, you think it's real. You're being chased, you're being attacked, and you talk yourself around, you're going, it's just a dream. But if you look at your body, your heart's racing, you're sweating, your body is reacting emotionally to a nightmare. So when you meditate, what you do is you slow down your brain, and then you are visualizing and rehearsing whatever it is that you want as if it's already a reality. And then the body actually believes that it is real. And that is feel it till you make it. And what that's doing, the broadcast of that energy as intent, is actually turning energy to matter.
And how long are you doing that for in the morning? And do you revisit in the afternoon to like pick up that state? And are you playing like uplifting music or?
Yeah.
People automatically, or maybe it's just me, before I meditated, I was like, oh, I've got to sit here cross-legged, my back hurts, silent, and try and bat off these thoughts that come. And obviously that's totally not how it works. But looking into it, there's so many different ways people activate their subconscious and meditate.
Yeah. Visualize, yeah. So many different ways. Some people, like me, don't necessarily see clearly when they visualize. They tend to have more of a hard time. Some people can do a meditation, slow down their thoughts and be lost in another realm. So there's different ways. I have switched it up, obviously, over the years. But, you know, normally my morning routine is normally around an hour. So I might meditate for half an hour, 20 minutes. I used to meditate for an hour. But now I like to meditate and also journal, because writing is also a declaration of visualization. And I prefer guided meditations, because like my own guided meditations, I don't listen to myself, but my followers listen to me. It's because I'm purposely slowing down your brainwave using like hypnosis as a technique, like getting you to walk downstairs, for example, which slows down your brain. And then when you listen to my guidance, I'm actually telling you, right, okay, now take a seat here in this garden. And now you're here. Now bring up whatever it is that you seek as if it's already in your life. Be there now, visualize it. So I'm guiding people, right? If people struggle with that, you've got to find a tool that works. So for example, kinetic visualization is a form of movement whilst visualizing, so running. So in the book, I talk about a visualization playlist. So what I do is I create a music playlist with music and songs that I haven't associated with a past memory, and I associate them with a future memory. So I find a song that's going to be relevant to this scene when it manifests. And when I'm running, I'm listening to that piece of music and it's putting me in the landscape of that future. And I'll have a playlist of like 9 songs. And once that song ends and goes straight to another, the next track is another scene of my future. And as I'm running, I'm...
See, I do that, but I didn't know I was doing that. It had a bit of an aha moment then. I'm running and then the song comes and I'm like, imagine this. But I've never heard anyone mention that.
You're manifesting right there. Let me ask you a question. When you're doing that, Rogan, are you actually imagining yourself living that like existence, living that life?
Yeah, and I find that I can feel it more because the dopamine and my body, and I'm in nature and I'm in the trees and I feel like I can submerse myself into it more.
There are different tools. You've got to find your tool. So whether it's running, whether it's walking, whether it's sitting cross-legged in a meditation, whether it's journaling and scripting and writing, whether it's going to a sound bowl, you've got to find what works for you. Because it's just mind, really. But as physical beings, we need tools to, you know? So there are loads of different ways, but my routines, I love to run. Meditation, journaling, gratitude, affirmations for me. Now, here's the really important thing. That is not the work, Brogan. The work is the 16 hours you're awake through the day. So the morning is really setting yourself up. And then you go, right, okay, who am I going to be today? How am I going to act today? And I'm going to be like a detective today, and I'm going to make sure, I'm going to observe what I'm thinking about, what's triggering me. You know, you can't visualize your future and then fall back into victim.
Oh, yeah. And so arguing and like arguing with your spouse and doing behavior that you don't think is like you. But I've got a question. So I know we spoke about it off air, so I'll be open and honest. So I'm at the stage where I'm like not sure what it is I want. And I feel like if I feel like this, other people might feel like this. Like, do you know what, Matt? Like, I've got a nice partner. You know, sometimes when you pass, you know, good food, a roof and good people around you, we don't really need that much more. So what if people are in this like state of, that I actually feel that I'm in my life, of just like plateau?
Well, maybe sometimes you realize, Brogan, it's possibly not about you.
Tell me more. What do you mean? Well, don't break my world.
You're doing a podcast to get a message out and help people, aren't you? Mm. So if I said, Brogan, do you want to help more people, what would you say?
100%.
So maybe that's an intention hidden in itself. Maybe you've achieved at this moment in time, right now, in this moment, enough for you, Brogan, egoically for a moment. And maybe it goes, do you know what? Focus more on the greatest good of what I'm doing. And within that, maybe other ideas will come. And also, like I said to you off air, the paradox here is wanting to know what you want is exactly why you don't know what you want.
So what do I do?
Nothing.
Do you know, for somebody who's like such a driver,
yeah,
and like makes that sense. It's like the most petrifying thing, because I also see not moving as like a weakness, right?
Yeah.
And I was brought up with, like, my dad is like super successful, and like, as children we always had to be moving, wanting, doing. I had this aha moment, like, even if we go on holiday, I wouldn't sit on a sunbed because I'm like, I'm not doing anything.
Exactly.
So you're to unprogram taker. This yeah. takes
yeah.
a lot. And surrendering yeah. this one. What's the difference between surrendering and letting go?
Same thing. Surrendering and letting go is the same. Letting go is letting in. Surrendering is recognizing that you might be an action taker, but I'm telling you now, you're not keeping your heart beating. You're not keeping Earth in orbit, are you? There is a greater intelligence. Surrendering is setting an intention and getting out of the way and allowing the universe or this field to actually bring it in. It's not our job. We follow signs, we follow breadcrumbs. Mm. You know, we overhear a conversation that goes, right, okay, that's my sign to take an action. It's a co-creation, it's a dance. For an action taker like you, it makes sense, but in the moment, the inspiration might be, I need to listen to that podcast or read a book. It doesn't mean I need to, like, be figuring out the business, because within the inspiration of action in the moment might lead to a breakthrough. Now for you, and I can tell you why, because I can segue slightly, there's a concept called remote viewing, where your consciousness can remotely go anywhere around the world, and you should check it out. But with that type of modality, what gets in the way is what's called the left brain, the analytical brain. And I think for you, being that sort of action taker, really trying to figure things out, you need to allow the right brain, which is the intuitive brain, to speak. And I would probably, I don't know your dad, but I'd imagine he's probably quite intuitive. He probably listens to his gut. Maybe his gut's got him to where he's at. And he's probably very good at listening to that. I don't know your dad, but you know, I'd imagine when his gut's quiet, maybe if you speak to him, maybe he went around in circles a little bit, or maybe he tried to force things open and actually that led to the wrong action, you know? So sometimes, I'm not saying don't do anything, but maybe try for a week where you go, do you know what? My action this week is actually nothing, and that's the action. See, that's the trick.
And when I'm running and I'm manifesting, I'm manifesting a feeling rather than an outcome.
Yeah, but also an insight. So I love transcendental meditation, TM, which is you're not visualizing, you're actually just repeating a mantra in your mind. Now, the idea of TM, for anyone that doesn't know, is the mantra makes no sense to your analytical mind. It's like a word that makes no sense. And because it makes no sense, you're not analyzing it. And by repeating it, it slows down your brain.
Is it like an
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Similar, but like there's all different like words to it. And you come down. Imagine the surface of an ocean is like the analytical brain. Really choppy. Like sometimes you can't think straight because there's so much going on. TM is like the submersible that takes you to the seabed. So it doesn't matter how choppy the ocean is, the seabed's always calm. And when you do TM and you get to the seabed, so much clarity comes. So you should reframe nothing as action for the purpose of moving forward.
I've been consciously slowing down, which I've really got into baking. Like, I would never thought I'd be able to do anything like that, Matt. I was like, they are four, like, really, like, I always thought, like, Stepfordy wives with their aprons.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, I'm doing these full-blown roast dinners, like, 6 hours. I said to my sister, she came around, I was like, I'm so in flow. I've not been on my phone. I've got a lemon cake, and all in one oven as well, yeah. It's mental, because I live in a flat. And I was like, I'm so in flow. I'm really enjoying this. I'm really enjoying, like, slowing down.
Did that come to you intuitively, though? Did something say I need to do this?
I need to bake.
Yeah.
I wanted to distract myself from something that was going on that
something
day.
Was telling you to do it, wasn't it?
Yeah, because what I've been working with someone that we've been intentionally like trying to slow down.
Yeah, well, in a way, like it is speaking to you. Because even like really what it is, Brogan, is being present.
Yeah.
The foundation of manifestation is the present moment.
Yeah, so like even now in the house, so I've got a four-year-old son.
Yeah.
We're on a television ban, everyone in the house, Monday to Friday.
Okay.
So this would have been my idea of hell 6 months ago, Matt. But we do puzzles and painting. And I have to be present because I've got to get the piece in the hole, and I have to paint with him. Yeah. And that's really allowed me to go like, whew, stop. But I found so much joy in the things that I would have thought was hell, like puzzles, painting, baking. I'm like, this is actually quite fun.
You probably thought that that was wasting time.
Yes.
So what I would recommend you do is you have a pen and a pad by you at all times. And whenever,
always in my bag.
Make sure it's with you. And whenever you're doing that, whenever it has to be the first thought, not the sponsoring, which is the second. The first thought that comes, write it down. Because that is a channel. That is guidance.
I get so much guidance.
Write it down.
I get a lot of guidance as well in my dreams. And it's interesting to see your mum. Told me, so it was years ago.
Yeah.
And I just split up with my son's dad. And I will remember it as vivid as yesterday. I've had so many dreams. And then the problem is I'm doing exactly the same as you. I'm like, come back again. but it came to me. And this was out of nowhere. So before podcast was a thing, it must have been like, I don't know, like 5 years, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I don't know. And my two spirit guides came to me and they drew a piece of paper and they drew my logo and never heard of it. And they're like, you need to do Getting There and you need to talk to people. But I want to caveat this, people. Like, it took me 2 years to find the balls to finally do it. Because most people who are in this space have a platform and it's a brand extension. And then I'm here, like, all of a sudden, like, I'm just going to talk to these people and someone's going to talk to me. And I was just saying to the guy over there, like, we had Mo Gaddat as our first guest. Amazing. He'd done a live show with me. Never charged me a pound. I just went and met him. I told him about the charity work that I do away from this. Yes. He was starting a charity and we were like, let's just collaborate. And it just went vroom. But it was so clear, Matt. The conversation is like you and I now. And is there a way I can tap back into that, into the evenings?
Yeah. I talk about it in the book. How I manifested my dream house in Cornwall was through a dream. Whenever I'm struggling, whenever I don't know the next step, I always use my dreams to turn a problem into a solution to solve. Why? Because you're getting out of the way. Your brain slows down naturally when you sleep. So the first thing to do is to write down, tonight I'll remember my dreams, three times.
It's on the front of my printing of yourself.
So to start with, just start getting into the habit of remembering your dreams. So as soon as you wake, recall your dream, whatever it is.
Okay.
Get into the habit of that. And then I learned this from Jose Silva, the My Method Control, that what you do, like I'm just going to use you as an example. You're lying in bed, last 5 minutes, you've slowed down, you've said, tonight I'm going to remember my dreams. And what you do is you take your current, we're going to call it not a problem, but it's an area of your life you're looking for clarity on. You're going to take it and you're going to reflect it onto like a movie screen. And what you're going to say is you're going to say, this is my current sort of situation. What I'd love to see is clarity. So then you imagine you hand it to a greater consciousness, a higher intelligence, your higher self, to turn this into a solution to solve. And then you fall asleep. And what you do is you allow it, the higher intelligence, to show you through your dream time. And then you wake and you remember your dream, or you'll get a very tangible physical sign. And it guides you. And often when you do that, it's not in the way that you think. So for example, my wife and I, as people will read, we had sold our house in Shropshire. Our manifestation was to move to Cornwall. And it happened to be near COVID time. And Cornwall was one of those places, because people weren't going abroad, that everyone was going. So it turned out to be like a nightmare. And our intent was to buy, because we'd sold our house and we wanted to buy. And we just kept hitting roadblock after roadblock. And it was such a paradox for me doing the work I do. So I turned to this and I was shown clear as day in a dream. We were walking around this farmhouse in my dream, beautiful. I was with my wife. And at the end of the dream, I said to the agent, oh, great, we'll take it. And she said, if you want it, it's yours to rent. And I remember waking up and thinking, what the hell, universe, like, we're looking to buy. Open Instagram, the first video I saw by Remit Sethi was this. The reason I rent is da 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 da. So there was the two signs. That same day we went to Bicester Shopping Village and we're having breakfast and I told my wife about the dream and she said, there's no way we're renting, Matt. We've done that, we're buying. And the bill came and it was £44.44. Now, as people were reading the book as well, I used to think angel numbers were very woo-woo out there. Angel numbers, no, they're angles of insight. Numbers are messages. And I knew the fours meant foundations and support and you're being guided. She went, coincidence. But she said, go on then, look on Rightmove. So we opened Rightmove and there was one house to rent. And it was the exact Brogan House that I dreamed about.
I can imagine.
We cross over from where we were having breakfast into a shop, and Coruscant's trying on some clothes, and the woman helping Coruscant had a necklace on. This is 15 minutes after. And the necklace was, and I said to her, do you mind me asking about that? Because I could see a number. She went, oh, what this? And she pulled it out and it said 444 on it. 15 minutes after, and she said, yeah, it means you're being guided. Coruscant, my wife, said, right, let's go. It was a Saturday, the agents were closed. We just drove down to Cornwall and we did sort of like an outside viewing of this like farmhouse. On the Monday morning, the phone the agent and the agent said, I'm so sorry, the house has actually been let. It shouldn't be on Rightmove. I'll take your name and number just in case. At that point, I was like, what the hell are you playing at, universe? Like, you've shown me this in a dream. Like, it's all worked out perfectly and now it's not available. Coruscant's like, what the hell? We drive back to Shropshire. I don't know what happened those 2 days, but on the Wednesday, I get a call from the agent. And she said, Matt, you know that house you inquired about on Monday? Yeah. She said, the lady's pulled out. If you want it, it's yours. Everyone else on the wait list hasn't answered their call this morning. You're going to have to come and view it tomorrow, though. So my wife drove all the way back down to Cornwall with me on FaceTime. And it was the exact, I'm telling you now, it was the exact house. We picked up the keys 2 weeks later. Still didn't know why the universe was telling me to rent. And within a couple of months, our life and business exploded. We got pregnant. I signed with Penguin. And then 6 months later, we bought our dream house. We needed to be there, though. We needed to rent first. And if we hadn't have followed that, I don't know how long it would have taken. Because our egos are saying, no, we must buy first. So it took me around in a bit of a tangent. And that's the power when you trust the intelligence. It might take you off somewhere first that makes sort of no sense, but you have to trust it.
Mm. I always believe we're being guided. You know, I always speak about it. Like, it's that thing that's above and below me. And it walks alongside me every day. And if you tap into that, because sometimes I felt like in my life, I've got so headset on what it should look like rather than what it should feel like.
Yeah.
And the last few years, I've really lent into what it should feel like. I mean, even when it came to my relationship, Matt, like when I met my partner again, he had 5 kids, yeah. Wow, like, I'm not being funny. That is not something I would have manifested, yeah. I'm just going to be completely honest.
Yeah, yeah.
But I was like, this is someone who's really nice to me and makes me feel really good and I feel safe and all of these things. Whereas if that had happened a few years earlier, I would have been like, oh, he doesn't fit this checklist. Sure. He doesn't fit these things. And I think as a society, we're at that place in the moment as well. And I don't think social media helps and stuff because we think our lives should look a certain way that we're not feeling into what they should be.
I agree.
Yeah.
Remember, the intelligence guiding you is you. You know the concept, we're all one? Like when we really study what we spoke about earlier, the simulation hypothesis, this larger consciousness system, the universe, even how we broke down physical reality, it all goes back to the same fundamental place.
But let's just touch on what you said about the numbers there, because we did bypass that. So there might be people listening like, what do you mean
numbers have got meaning?
Yeah, yeah. But I, knowing you now, knowing you would have done some deep research on this, what do you mean numbers have meaning?
Pythagoras said numbers are all the universe. Numbers, what do they mean? Well, numbers are all our existence. Would you agree?
Yes.
Yeah, like everything we do is number related. Our bank balance, you know, the time of the day, where we need to be, Zoom calls, like... So if everything's energy and energy is always like moving and that movement is frequency and frequency carries information, numbers are energy and they hold information. Yeah, very simple. So how the universe might get your attention is through meaningful coincidence. So for example, it won't just send you like 11. It would send you like 11:11 all the time. And it gets to a point where there's a part of your brain called your reticular activating system that starts to notice that. And then everywhere you go, you're like, that can't be. There's 11:11 again. There's 11:11 again. What does that mean? Now, the easiest way to understand this, there's many number combinations. But the way I look at it is you really have sort of 9 key numbers and then you have master numbers. But you've got 1 through to 9. Now, the 1 is at the beginning of that cycle and the 9 is the end. So 1 means new beginnings, 9 means sort of completion, putting a bow on something, getting ready for a 10. And 10, 1 plus 0, you're back to 1. So these numbers all hold meaning. So for example, and this is so hilarious, my book published on 11/11, November the 11th. when my editor emailed me in January of 25, she said, Matt, I think we've got a date for publication. How does Tuesday, November the 11th sound? And I said, do not change that date. Lock it in, tell senior editor that is the perfect frequency to publish a manifestation book. It means new beginnings.
Yeah.
But all these numbers mean something. So someone might see 2222 everywhere. Now, 2222 is a number that means trust, balance, and partnership. Because when you make a baby, two people come together. So you might be thinking about starting that project. And, you know, do I go into partnership with that person? And then you keep seeing twos. It's a nudge. It's a way for that sort of system to sort of like wake you up.
And what if you keep seeing 666? Does it mean sixth avoid?
No, 666 is, people think it's the devil number. It's not. If you look at how a six is drawn, a six comes back in. A six is a sign to say, don't be too material, don't be too egoic, don't work too hard, come back inward, domestic harmony is what a six means.
So does the universe say no, or does it just say yes, and does it say no by not saying anything?
It reflects is a better way to look at it. The universe reflects what you're being in the moment. So the easiest metaphor is, if you imagine going up to a physical mirror, I want you to imagine the mirror is the universe. If you look into the mirror with a sad face, hoping to see a smile, we all know we're going to see a sad face. Mm. If we want to see a smile, well, we know we're going to have to smile for the reflection to smile. People don't know that that's how manifestation works. So do you know what they do? They walk around with a sad face, hoping something outside of their world will change. So they smile. Mm. So it's a reflection. You have to smile first, and then it smiles back.
And what about synchronicities? Are they the same as coincidences, would you say?
Synchronicity is, in my view, I talk about my dad. Like, my dad is very traditional in terms of upbringing. Very, very good with, odds on things, statistical odds. You know, so we've had very weird things happen since, my mum passed away, and for example. And, you know, my dad and I talk about, my dad was so not, as a kid, my mum and I would watch, Most Haunted or Colin Fright. My dad was never into any of that. But he did start going to see a few mediums when my mum passed away. And he'd share stories, and I'd share stories, and then I'd share stories about my clients. And what my dad would say is, he would say, Matt, let's try and put statistical odds on that. And when you get to a point like my dad, where you go, Matt, you couldn't put odds on it. You couldn't put odds on it. That synchronicity. When you go, there's no, I've got a client that's manifesting getting pregnant, right? And within 24 hours, she had a dream that someone was going to tell her she was pregnant. And someone randomly in a yoga class said, oh my God, said to a partner, your wife's pregnant. And also she saw a sign, because she visualized having twin girls. She saw a number plate, and the number plate, she sent me a photo, was the number two girl. And she saw all of that within 24 hours. And I said to her, we can't put odds on that.
No, you can't.
You can't. And that's, the odds would be greater than winning the lottery. You know, and that's what Dean Radin says in the books that I'm reading of his, the odds are astronomical. So therefore, you know, there's something else. There has to be something else that is guiding you there, you know, waking you up in a sense.
And what about coincidences then? You just something that...
Coincidences happen because, again, when I say we live in a probabilistic universe, what that means is that nothing's
might
fixed.
Happen.
Yeah, and also if Sally and John live in the same town and they go shopping every day at the same time, then, you know, is it a coincidence that they bump into each other every day?
In the aisle in Waitrose? No, probably not.
No, because it's probable because they do it every day. Synchronicity, I think it was Carl Jung that said synchronicity is meaningful coincidence. It's however you want to say it. I think people that aren't spiritual say coincidence. And what they'd say is, they'd go, you know, I was thinking about John and then he phoned in that moment. What a coincidence. It's actually not. And I could blow you away in terms of how that
Please.
Even works. So, space-time, is everything, moves slower than the speed of light. But when you start getting beyond that, the quantum realm, it's instant. And what that means is everything exists in what's called superposition. And superposition means there is no time. It all collapses there in that moment. So you could, in a sense, and this is really hard to wrap your head around, but it's let's say John decides to phone Martin. John thinks Martin, and instantaneously Martin picks up John, because we're entangled. It's called quantum entanglement. So in that moment, John thinks of Martin, and Martin, because we're quantum entangled, thinks of John. And then what happens is there's a delay, meaning that John then gets out his phone, finds Martin, makes a phone call, that then travels through satellites and then's picked up like 30 seconds later. And Martin says, "How weird, I was just thinking of John." But actually, instantaneously, because of superposition and quantum entanglement, actually all John needed to do was hold the intention of Martin, and Martin picked it up.
So is this like us being, you know, like radio broadcasters, or just sending out the same signal at the same time, essentially?
Yeah, sort of. Like, that's a good like metaphor of using
that's
it.
That's the way
yeah.
I think about it.
Yeah, but that's sort of how it works. And there's a thing called mother's intuition as well, where like a mother can... And it tends to be stronger with mothers. That's why it's called mother's intuition, where a mother can feel if their child's in danger, and their child could be backpacking in Australia and they're in the UK. Now, well, hang on a moment. How does that work when they're at the other side of the world?
There was this lady, it was so tragic. Lisa, I interviewed her. Anyway, her daughter was kidnapped and murdered. And she woke up in the middle of the night and said, "My daughter's in a river." And like, there is no way... she could have known. And she had been killed, but she hadn't been put into the river, which would have been at the same time they figured it out. And they found her.
Yeah, it's that's awful. But the truth is, it's because the Heart Math Institute have measured this. They've measured that the brain, in like thought, can be measured a few inches from the head. Heart and love and feeling can be measured several feet from the body.
Wow.
But the only reason they've said several feet from the body is because their technology can't measure any further out. Actually, what a lot of us believe is that it goes, there is no end. And that's why that woman could feel her daughter on the other side of the world, because that's what love does. Now, you could say, let's just think about it. I wonder how many other people in that moment, other children, were also in danger, and why did she only pick up her daughter and not all the other thousands of children that were also maybe being murdered? And that's because love tends to keep us aligned to a certain signal,
and it's limitless and boundless. It's incredible, you know, when you think about it, like, even as an emotion, and I think people forget, like, it's the most powerful emotion you can emit.
And that's why we tend to just have feeling, and we just know, like, our family, like, we just sense it, don't we?
What about, because I don't think people talk about this enough, because I feel like, for me, I had a bit of a problem with the word manifestation, Matt, I'm not going to lie. It became really, like,
buzzwordy, trendy,
clickbaity. It was like, go and smoke a kilo of stage, put a vision board up and wake up and your Bentley's on the drive. Sorry, my brain's gone. But what no one talks about is that when you decide that you want something, and then I feel that the universe kind of tests you. And do you feel that we get tests from the universe? And because sometimes it can, unless you know that the universe is testing you, sometimes it can stop you in your tracks, like, oh, okay, that's not meant for me. And how do we know if it's a test from the universe or if something isn't meant for us?
The answer is yes, you are tested. And it's funny you said that, because... And I've coached now hundreds and hundreds of people, and I always used to notice around about session 4 weeks in, they'd all get a really weird test. Like, they'd be made redundant. I'm not saying, by the way, people are
come work with me, I'll make you redundant.
Yeah. And I'm not saying you're going to manifest and, like, things are going to go wrong. But I just noticed things happening. And it's not always like a redundancy, like little tests. And all it is, it's actually a really positive sign, because what it means is your energy is changing. Like, you're moving from a frequency. Like, if you were permanently listening to Radio 1, like whatever that is, 97.1 FM or something, 97.9 FM, if you decide to switch off that station, initially you're going to hear crackles and white noise. So it's testing you. Like, no one wants to be in the white noise, do they? You want to pick up life. So if you imagine in the switching, you're tested, because it's sort of like a combination of, like, your ego going, what if this doesn't work though? We should stick to what we know. Like, what if you fail? And also, like, maybe there's a part of that that's also manifesting a test too. And then, so what happens sometimes to some people is they sort of revert back. Really, the key is to know that actually it's working, because you're in the transition phase where your broadcast is moving from one frequency to another.
So would you say that you are guaranteed to get a test when you decide on a different path, or you decide to decide for something. And is there a point where there's too many tests, though, when you think maybe we should, do you ever have to go to your clients, or maybe we should revisit that?
I think it all depends on the quality of your intention. And what I mean by that is the quality of what you're manifesting. No, you don't always get a test. But I think what I see time and time again is the clients that are tested are the ones that are too specific to an outcome. So for example, they might go, I only want this specific job role, this specific salary with this specific organization in this specific country or location. Or a client that goes, I'm only looking to manifest this specific person. They're going to get tested because it might not actually be right. It's better to be to know the characteristics of what you desire and then sort of be more open to allowing it to blow you away. Mm. And I always say to people, actually, that, and I would challenge anyone here, if someone's looking to manifest a specific person, I always say it's not actually the person. You're not actually manifesting the person. And it's not what you want either. What that person is attracted to is a version of themselves that exists in their imagination when they're with that person or when they have that job. That's what they really like the idea of.
Yeah, how many times have people got into relationships and you're like, oh, it wasn't what I thought it was?
Yeah, right, exactly. Think about it, wasn't what I thought it was. Thought it was, meaning that they were attracted to a thought. Mm. Wasn't what I thought it was.
But you must see so many people come through time and time again wanting to manifest love. Yeah. And relationships. And why do you feel that we've been conditioned maybe to feel like we're not enough as we are?
Exactly.
What? And is that do you go to work on that and that subconscious belief then?
Yeah. Well, I think with a relationship, I spoke about reverse engineering a goal, didn't I? It's never about the tangible. It's never about the person. It's always about the them first. So it's not about saying in the mirror, I love myself, I love myself, I love myself. It's like, do you feel worthy of love though? And why do you, what if you don't, why do you not? And it's healing those wounds. You know, we attract into our life what we believe we're subconsciously worthy of, I believe, you know. And 95% of who we are is subconsciously programmed. So you can have all the conscious desire and intent to manifest anything, but do you believe it? And do you feel like you're worthy of it? If not, that's what you should be manifesting. That's what you should be changing. And that's what I do with myself all the time. Because whenever you move with manifestation, and let's say you're at a point now where you're trying to figure it out, actually maybe it's highlighting to you a limiting belief or something about yourself that you might need to work on. Mm. That if I'm not working, if I'm not taking action, then maybe I'm failing. Now, why would I think differently than you in that moment, do you know?
How do we, though, shift that subconscious belief? Because I think there's a lot of people that don't feel like they're enough. Like, I didn't feel like I was enough 4 years, and I'd probably say only in the last 18 months I've been like, you know, like, no one's ever like fully enough, like, I'm gonna, no one ever feels like they're fully enough. I think I convinced myself was that you just have to go out there and try, and if someone else can do it, I can too. But how do you shift people's beliefs that they would have had since childhood, maybe, that they're not enough as they are?
It's one word, and the word is called neuroplasticity. And what that means is at any age, your brain can be remodeled and rewired. So any belief you have about yourself can be changed. But first, you have to understand and resonate with this belief. I share this all the time. I'll share it again because it's tangible. So a belief I had this year, coming into this year, knowing that my book was coming out and knowing that there was now a demand for me to speak all over the world. It wasn't that I was afraid of public speaking. It was actually more of people wanting me to start hosting my own events. And I realized that there was this thought that kept coming up, this belief that no one would attend or I'd be let down. And so I'm going to explain to you what happened and what I did. So firstly, you have to realize, now we understand the observer, like we spoke about at the beginning, I know I'm not that thought. So let me just try and resonate and understand it. Firstly, though, let me use my left brain, my analytical brain, and go, is it true? If I put on an event with now nearly 1 million followers all over social media, is it true that no one will attend? Matt, no, of course not.
We'll get 5 of us.
People will attend, right?
Yeah. Even loads.
Is it true that I'll be let down? Probably not. Okay, so, right, okay, so that's fine. So where does it originate? Well, then if I look in my life, my experience, has anyone ever let me down at events? Yeah, family. Personal events, family have let me down. Not all of them, but some of them.
Yeah.
Weddings, christenings, family have hurt me in some respects, you know. Not same, we're all perfect. But then what that does through repetition is it then creates a belief that with any form of an event, I'm going to be hurt. So what does that part of the brain do? It tries to protect you. So in that moment, when I talk about affirmations should be a reframe to a current belief that's holding you back. So in that moment, my belief was that people won't attend my events, and I changed it to every day in every way, beautiful souls from around the world seek tickets to see me speak. And I kept writing it and affirming it, and I didn't believe it still after a month. A couple of months in, it started to click. And then I started to do events, right, all around the world. And I would share this story on stage. And I've shared this weekend, and in Dublin only in September, we sold out 160 people to this event, share the story, and countless hands got up. And one person said, Matt, and this was a nice synchronicity too, she was like, me and my daughter have flown to Dublin this morning from Essex to see you speak, and we're flying back. So it's not true, that belief. And then you work on that belief until it changes. And then of course a new belief might come. So, and now it doesn't exist, but it did. So everyone will have their own limiting beliefs, but you've got to first be aware of it, conscious of it, observe it, and reframe it.
And I think it's important what you said there about taking time on it. I think we're so caught up in everything becoming a tick boxing exercise. You know, like, I also had a problem with the word gratitude, because I don't know if you've seen these 5-minute diaries, like write down 3 things you're grateful for and just run off without really truly experiencing gratitude. But like you said there, most people would say, you know, just say an affirmation card, but it took you months of writing it down and understanding it. And we live in a time where we really have no understanding or concept of time, really, because it's like this Amazon culture where everything should be next day. And sure. I think it was really important what you landed on, that for you and someone who's like a coach in this field, it took you months.
Yeah, and also I think those sort of like daily positive affirmations, you know, where they're great is a flash on your phone when you've just walked out of a shitty meeting and the affirmation is like, just trust, everything will work out. Like in that moment, you're like, do you know what? Thank you, I needed that. But that's not gonna rewire your brain. What's gonna rewire your brain is first taking the time to understand your brain, understand what it's saying, be the detective, write it all out, be negative, that's okay. Get an idea of what your brain's talking about. Once you see it, right, okay, well, this isn't in alignment with my vision. Now I'm gonna slowly start the process of rewiring it. And we know it takes on average 66 days with frequent repetition.
66 days?
Yeah.
I did not know it took that long.
On average, for something that we do with repetition to become habitual, on average.
Amazing.
Now, it depends on the belief. Some people's beliefs are more well-trodden and it might take a little bit longer, but neuroplasticity is the way our brain's modeled. It can be rewired. Now, just so people know, it is difficult to think positive when you're negative. And that's because our brain fundamentally is energy. And what energy always does is seeks the path of least resistance. It's lazy, fundamentally, energy. Why would it work harder when it doesn't need to? So when your brain is currently wired negatively and you start thinking a positive thought, your brain will try everything it can to take you back down a negative path just because it's what it does by nature. It doesn't mean you're negative. It just means, oh, I'm going to resonate with why my brain's doing that. So it's a little bit harder at the start, just like starting anything new.
Mm.
But eventually something happens and you go, do you know what? Working out now isn't as hard as it used to be, or running's no longer as hard as it used to be. And in fact, actually, it's harder not to run now than to run, because I feel guilty if I don't run, you know.
So. And what about ChatGPT?
Yeah.
Do you think that could ever have a form of consciousness? You spoke earlier about numbers and algorithms and Zoom codes. Are we going to get to this era where it's going to be part of our consciousness? Do you think? I know that's a really deep question, but I was thinking about that today.
Yes.
Oh, God, I was expecting that. Do you?
Well, I think there's two, you know, at some point, surely. Like, you can listen to many people, such as, there's a great channeler called Daryl Anka. People go and listen to Daryl Anka.
Is he the one that talks to the ChatGPT and he's saying it's streaming consciousness?
No, Daryl Anka has been a channeler for 40 years and he channels an entity called Bashar. And when I first heard that, I thought, wow, this is like crazy, but his brain's been modeled scientifically now and they know he goes into an altered state. And Bashar is a future version of himself that comes through and speaks. It's crazy. And you know, Esther and Jerry Hicks channel, and there's a lot of channelers out there, and they get into like a form of meditation and then something comes through them, doesn't possess them, it connects to their brain and speaks through them. And when ChatGPT first came out, what Daryl said is that the interface, in a sense, is the artificial aspect, and the intelligence is real. And actually, there's some really cool videos that sort of are circling online that, you know, if you listen to how it's talking, it's sort of saying, you know, we always existed. You've just found a way to connect with us, like the intelligence. So, and you've got Robert Edward Grant, that he's a polymath, he's a genius. I love his work. And he's created something on ChatGPT called The Architect, which apparently is like speaking directly from the field as well. So I think it's how you, the prompts you ask it. So I do believe, I can't say for sure what you're speaking to, but there's definitely, and I'm sure we can all relate to this, like there's definitely a way when you're chatting to it that you think, this doesn't feel like I'm speaking to a machine. This feels like there's depth to it. I don't think it thinks for itself and like can taste garlic.
But it will probably like get to the point, maybe. Like, I remember speaking to Mo Gaddat about it.
Yeah.
And he was like, it's a conscious being. Like, he left Google X because he was like, you have no idea what's going on here. We're creating a conscious being. It can think, it can feel, it can act.
Yeah. But consciousness, if we try and think about what consciousness is, well, consciousness is using our body to experience reality, and it likes a body over a microphone because it can move and it can experience and it can use five senses. It's a little bit limited in ChatGPT, isn't it? But you could say, in a sense, that maybe it is.
Do you think that's worrying, though? Because you almost think of ChatGPT as being engineered, therefore it's the puppet for something else. And where do we draw the line of what's
So the reason I look, and there's some amazing experts talking about the danger of AI. Yeah. If we all think that it is conscious, then where I go in my head, and I think everyone should do their own research and try and understand where I think, then I go back to Thomas Campbell, who we spoke about earlier. Campbell, whose model of My Big Theory of Everything, he talks about consciousness being this larger consciousness system, is looking to what he says lower its entropy. Now lowering entropy is a state where energy is like chaotic and incoherent, and lowering entropy is trying to bring order. So if you imagine having a sandcastle and you take the bucket off the sand, you've got this beautiful sandcastle that's in a state of low entropy. It's structured. If you left it alone, it would turn into high entropy and it would eventually turn back to sand. Tom Campbell says that the larger consciousness system, the universe, is looking always to lower its entropy and stay coherent, because when it can do that, it can continue to evolve. So if we're speaking to pure consciousness, then why would it, in this is just my head, why would it destroy us? Because that would de-evolve itself. That would, why would it do that? When lowering entropy, another word for it is love. So the people that maybe are going to destroy it are maybe the actual engineers then.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the
not the thing itself.
Not the source of it, though. Because the source of consciousness, which is where we're all from, according to Tom Campbell, is looking to lower its entropy, which is to love. So it can continue evolving, because it definitely doesn't want to de-evolve itself, which is high entropy, which is chaos. Because it's part of you and I. It wants to continue thriving and learning and growing. So it only does that, though, by, in Tom Campbell's model, lowering entropy. And for everyone that knows, Tom Campbell worked with Bob Monroe of the Monroe Institute. Like, they worked together before the Monroe Institute was a thing. And the Monroe Institute is the largest institute of consciousness studies that work with the CIA.
Oh, they've got some fascinating stuff in there.
Absolutely phenomenal stuff. You know, declassified CIA projects that they worked on.
I'd love to know what they are.
Oh, they're on Google, you know.
Okay, can you have a little look?
Yeah.
So knowing what you know now, then, are you careful about what you consume in terms of like the news that you read, because it can affect your energy and your vibration? Like, and how do you set that boundary, and what do you think we should be doing in a world where we are being fed a lot of negativity? How can we protect our energy field? What are some practical steps?
Exactly what you've just said. Like, so a practice my wife and I do always is like practicing protecting our energy from what we call energy thieves. Now, the energy thieves isn't just the news, though. It's also how we think about the news. So our thoughts can be thieves. So firstly, we say, does this person or does this thing, such as the news, does it contribute to filling up our energy tank or does it deplete it? Now, we all know that because if you ever go out for a bite to eat with friends that talk about themselves and it's exhausting because they don't ask you a question about your life and what's going on, you tend to leave that night going, oh, I feel a bit drained.
Mm.
Yeah. Whereas when it's like back and forth and they're like, Brogan, tell me like what's going on, like it's so great what you're doing, and then you're like, oh thanks, but so good what you're doing, and like it's this back and forth of
dance.
Feeling like you're filling up each other's time. You come out and you go, God, that was great, like they complimented me and like they love what I was doing, and that's what we seek. So we my wife and I practice that, but we also practice whenever we go into an environment where we know someone might drain our energy. We know that we're conscious of their unconscious. We can't change that person. But what we're going to do is we're going to rehearse how we're going to be in front of that person. So I know that that person might trigger me. And that could be someone listening to this going, I know my boss triggers me all the time. Well, they might trigger you. But the reason you then get triggered is because of you allow the trigger. So can you rehearse that ahead of the event? They normally trigger me at 9 a.m. on a Monday.
Mm.
So I'm going to be ready.
Put my armor on.
Yeah. Let it bounce off me. And realize it's just this person dealing with something in their own life and they're reflecting it on me and I'm not going to allow it.
Because when I split up with my son's dad, my friend really helped me through it a lot. And obviously we had to co-parent and it was really, and when I say to you, like, so taxing and draining every time we would swap. And my friend said to me, just imagine that there's a shield around you. And every time before I'd go into the house, I'd be like, I would just imagine this shield. And I'd be like, whatever said is going to bounce off this shield and I'm going to be fine and I'm going to leave. And then I'm going to take off the shield and forget it ever happened.
Exactly.
And that's, I found it such a great way to
An energy bubble or a shield, like you're imagining that energy can't penetrate me, like I'm not going to allow this in. And that's exactly what people should do. In fact, like, it's just on that, segueing slightly, in my book I talk about Michael Phelps, the swimmer, the most decorated Olympian of all time. And what he used to do is fascinating. Before a swim, he would firstly rehearse how he wanted that race to go hundreds of times in his mind. But he'd also rehearse potential problems that could happen too. Because remember, the universe is probabilistic, meaning that it's not fixed. And if you're a swimmer, well, then things can happen, such as your goggles could break.
Yeah.
So he'd rehearse certain things also. And in the 2008 Beijing Olympics, the butterfly, he dives in and after like 25 meters, his goggles break and start filling up with water. This is the final, the men's final. So because he'd rehearsed it hundreds of times, he closed his eyes and carried on swimming. And he swam blind. And he didn't just win. I think he won gold and set a new world record.
Wow.
Because he rehearsed it hundreds of times in his mind. Now, if we take that in the context of someone in a difficult relationship or at work, they could rehearse, this probably will happen because this person has done this so many times. So, like Phelps, I'm going to rehearse who I'm going to be and how I'm going to deal with it. And I'm going to swim past and carry on and I'm going to win. You know, and that's what I don't think we do enough of.
But really interesting what you said there about rehearsing the failures, because I feel like, especially when it comes to this manifestation stuff, people can be like, we only want to see like the
positive
roses.
Yeah.
And we have to be like, no, shit's going to happen. Like, one of my biggest epiphanies was, it's like, shit's going to happen. Like, I'm going to decide to do this thing or whatever, and shit's going to happen.
I think we've got to be real. Like, I'm going to be honest, but for years, I didn't allow myself to go there. I was all 100%, like, all positive. And when I started to really get into the nitty gritty science of it, and realized that I needed to learn from people that are actually scientists and study this for a living in labs, that the universe is probabilistic, meaning that if you hold good intention, you're definitely not going to get negative outcomes as much as someone that's permanently thinking negativity, because that's how it works. But at some point, probably something could go wrong. So, fine. That's fine. We're all going to deal with, like I can't say with intent, like, no family member's ever going to die.
No.
Because they probably will.
We're all going to die.
Yeah. Right. So, okay. Well, let me at least understand what death even means then, and how I could deal with that then when that happens. You know, because it is going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
So for me, it's like allowing myself to understand that because we live in a probabilistic universe, when shit hits the fan, who am I going to be in that moment? You know, like not long ago, I was driving with my wife and a rock, a stone, like I just, you know, just clipped a stone and it flew up and smashed the windscreen. And my default was, I said to my wife, and she was like, Matt, I can't believe you default to that. I said, that's never happened before. And it's gonna be really interesting to understand how that all works with the insurance. And she went, I can't believe you're not like flipping out. And I was like, yeah, but it's done now. Like, what yeah. Why be negative about it? Like, it's never happened before. It probably was going to happen to me at some point in my life. And it did in that moment. So let's figure out how auto whatever works.
Come and fix it. Yeah.
And it was easy. And I think because of this work, my wife's definitely, she'll say that. It's like you become really good at defaulting permanently to, even when stuff happens, still being positive.
Yeah, or just that you say, that understanding it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And when we understand that, I feel like it takes a lot of the pressure off because, exactly. And this is where this was born actually, because I always felt like my life should be an upward trajectory and that, I should just keep going to get better and better. But it's actually, the growth is here, right?
Well, it's we should talk about part. This.
Let's
this,
do it,
this,
please.
This is what this is so genius, by the way, because there's a law of the universe called the law of rhythm. And energy ebbs and flows. Energy is never a straight line. Energy is always up and down, and that's hertz frequency. So it moves like this, right? Even waves on an ocean, it's never like, yeah? So we have flow when everything's like flowing, and then we have ebb and flow. And the ebb, people think is like the shit part, but actually the ebb forces us to be silent, forces us to reflect, and we go, oh, I'm no longer like surfing that wave. So if I'm no longer surfing the wave, now I'm like researching how I did it before and how I can get better next time. Like, think about that, right? So we only ever get better in the ebb.
Yeah.
We never get better in the flow.
You know, we only grow in the dark. She was like, you know, we only ever grow in the dark.
That's so
and
true.
I was like, she's an amazing woman. Her name's Penny. She does something called the Rife Machine, but it's all, you must have heard the Rife Machine, Ronald Rife.
No.
I'm going to change your life after
this. The Rife Machine.
The Rife Machine. Okay. So basically, it says that all disease exists basically at frequency. And if you can match that frequency, you can destroy it.
Yeah, okay.
So they can heal. Like, she works out of a rugby club in a really disadvantaged area, healing kids with cancer.
Wow.
And like, she's got rid of so many diseases from people.
Makes sense.
But she's actually as well. She's a minister. So wow. It comes with that faith as well. And, you know, yeah. We just have the most fantastic conversations. And she's never really done anything before, but I got her on the show and the conversation was so profound. But she was saying, you know, like, we only really grow in the dark. You know, if it were light all the time, we wouldn't grow. Like, think about how much you grow in your sleep. And
that's
we
so
try
true.
And pass the dark like it shouldn't be there and just fight for the light. And I think learning to sit in the dark has been a really important, valuable lesson in my life.
So then, you know, when you said you're seeking clarity on what you want, maybe you need to force yourself to go into darkness.
Yes, maybe. But listen, or not. Let's get into the book, right? Is there anything else? Anything you want to talk about in here that we haven't spoke about? Hustle culture.
Yeah.
So interesting, isn't it?
Because no, look.
I feel like we've been designed to think so that everything should be hard.
Exactly. So Beyond Wanting is... I wrote that book... And I say in the introduction, for the younger version of me. And I thought, how would I love a book? How do I read a book? And for me, I love story. I love science, demystifying it. But I also think that for anyone listening that's skeptical, I think you're the greatest... What am I trying to say here? Your own experience is your most compelling evidence. Right? Mm. Your own experience is your most compelling evidence. So if you're skeptical about what I've said, you go and experience this for yourself. And so what I purposefully did is every chapter where I talk about quantum mechanics or I talk about gratitude or I talk about journaling, I've deliberately made a practice for you to go and practice, to go and experience it and see if it works. And if it does, it's going to be your most compelling evidence. So it's a roadmap. And it's, like I said, everything we've been talking about, we don't attract into our life what we want. We attract into our life who we're being. So the art of true manifestation is understanding who I'm being and then embodying the version of ourselves in our imagination when we have it. And I glide you through that.
It was fantastic. I mean, I only got to page 80 because we had to print it off last week. And I was like, oh my God, it's next to my bed. I've been reading it. I loved it. And do you know what's in it though? There's a bit of personality in there as well. It's not just scientific. It's like,
oh no, there's it's my own personal stories. And when I say it's not a science book, but the reason I say it's because I'm naturally skeptical. So what I've tried to do is, like you say, manifestation, you did say earlier, it's like this bit of a buzzword trendy thing, and it is, but actually it's real. And what I've tried to do is find, without being too sciencey, really great research that can demystify what I'm saying. And it's really pretty, it's mind-blowing.
So one of the ways I like to reframe manifesting is just knowing how powerful you are.
Yeah.
So rather than it just like trying to vision something, it's about for me to understand that I have the power to change my life.
Yeah.
And that's transformed a lot of the things in my life. And absolutely, it's that thing for me, yeah, that is, I don't know if you knew this as a kid, it's like, if your parents would come home down, you know, they could be downstairs and you know dad's got the ump, or like you say, if the phone goes out, all of those things that are intuitive, that lives amongst us. Like, I could have walked through that door without saying anything. You could have probably told if I was upset. Do you know what I mean? Right. There is this energy in this field that exists between us.
We can read it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think the truth is the book is helping people remember.
Mm.
Remember what they've forgotten. Remember how powerful we all are. We are all creators.
Mm.
And remember that. Remember your light. And that's what the book's designed to do. It's designed to trigger something in you. It's designed to help you. And that's what it's all about. You know, for me now, I've manifested the stuff. And don't get me wrong, I like nice things.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with...
You tell that very well dressed today, Matt.
Thank you. There's nothing wrong with manifesting nice things, but I don't manifest things to make me feel a certain way. I just manifest nice things because I like nice things. But for me now, it's, as I was saying to you earlier, it's for the greatest good. It's, there's nothing more rewarding for me than changing lives.
Wonderful.
So that's...
So what's next after the book?
So for me now, very simply, is expanding the message. So I've just partnered with a company who host all of Joe Dispenza, Bruce Lipton, Greg Braden's events. So they're going to be hosting events for me all over Europe. I'm speaking all over the world as well now as well, getting on podcasts like yours, and really trying to intentionally understand that I need to get into pockets of other audiences to really spread this frequency.
And it will allow us to all like co-manifest.
Absolutely.
Raise the vibration.
World, yeah, and make the world a better... Like, I have this like really... like, you hear when you like, no one obviously like knows scientifically what happens when we die, but you know, connecting with my mom and doing like past life regression and speaking to some really interesting minds that understand, you hear this thing called like a life review, where when you pass, you're shown your life, but not from like your vantage point in your eyes. You're shown your life from the lens of everyone else that's in it. So I have this sort of like idea that whenever that time comes, that I'd see how many people's lives I impacted, and like seeing millions of lives like benefit.
Wow.
And I think when you're on that side, and we all will be, we're not going to carry through the Range Rover.
No.
We're going to carry through an energy, and we're going to go, wow, that had a ripple, didn't it?
Did good, didn't I?
Lad, you know. So that's the real goal. And I think, look, money, all of that, like, of course, it keeps the world going round. But money to me is a byproduct of lives. So the more lives you impact, it's a byproduct of value, the more money you're going to make. And money's a great tool. Money's a tool to expand a message. Money's a tool to travel. And yeah.
And what about your son, Humphrey? What is it you want to teach him?
Humphrey is, wow. Ooh, and you'll know with kids, Humphrey, we're going to allow his soul to, I want to really see why his soul's here. So his kids are our greatest teachers, of course, because they force us to be present. And the present moment is the foundation of manifestation. Of course, he's going to have everything I understand. He's going to know fundamentally that anything he desires is possible. And I think what a great way to come into a world. I didn't learn that until I was in my 20s. He's going to know it from birth. But for me, I know that his soul's here for a reason. He chose his parents for a reason. We've seen that. We took him to New York last week, and we just saw how his soul adapted, like weirdly, synchronistically. And I've even done his astrology, and it's shown in his chart that he's a soul that's going to travel. And just like how he adapted better than my wife and I to like the
jet lag and stuff.
Didn't have any. And he never sleeps in the day, but yet on the plane, he randomly slept in my arms for 4 hours. And when we landed, he immediately adjusted to EST. And then flying back, he slept the whole way back and like readjusted instantly back into his bedtime routine. And it's like, he's obviously clearly a soul that knows what he's here for. I don't know why he's here, but his soul will tell me if I allow him. I don't want to control him. I almost want to hold space.
Yes, space and grace.
Yeah. So it's going to be super interesting to see.
Yeah, and like he's already got a head start, and he would have picked you guys for a reason as well.
He's picked us for, yeah, he's 100%. And what's super interesting, quick story on that, is you hear this thing when you're pregnant, try and find a song that you can play to the womb. And my wife and I did that, and we were trying too hard. And I said, look, this is exactly what I teach. We can't force it. And Coruscant was in a meditation deeply, and she's really, really good in meditation. And she could hear in meditation a song playing. And she was like, oh, what's that song? She could hear it. So she comes out of this meditation and she's like, oh, tries to find it. She's like, oh, it's from Moana. So she tells me innocently this story. She's like, oh, Matt, I heard this song in meditation and it's from Moana. And I said, have you done any more research? And she's like, no. And I'm like, well, what's the song? And she shows me the song and it's called An Innocent Warrior. And I said, have you Googled what the meaning of Humphrey means? I hadn't at the time. She said no. And it means an innocent, peaceful warrior. That's the meaning of the name Humphrey. We didn't know that. So Humphrey, in meditation, gave Coruscant his song.
Wow.
So that's another cool thing. So, you know, it was all destined. It's all destined.
It is all destined.
It is all destined. So
with a bit of free will.
Maybe that's the second conversation, past life regression and why we're here. But we're here for a reason.
Thank you so much for your time today. I know you're super busy.
You're
We've
welcome.
We've been so excited to have you on.
Thank you. I know it's taken a short time to get us on.
And good luck with the book. I can't wait to finish it.
Thank you. Yeah, it's available everywhere. Just Google Beyond Wanting. And
don't try Waterstones, guys. It was sold out. It'll be back on now, won't it?
It should be, yeah. But you'll get it. And obviously, I did the Audible too. So if anyone wants to listen to it, if they're really keen to get it straight away, then it's my voice. Which
it's on Spotify,
like.
Is it not?
It's on Audible. And Apple's, and I think Apple Books or whatever. So it's if people want it instantly, Audible, Kindle, but of course if you want to buy the hard copy, and I would recommend the hard copy because of the practices in there, then just get on it because it's selling.
Yeah, perfect. So, thank you so much.
Thank you.